Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I guess we're back. We haven't had Shiur in quite some time, just because we had Yontiv, and then after Yontiv, we had the Chagei Iyar, the Yom HaShoah, followed by Yom HaTzma'ut, etc. So now we are finally returning, and I'd like to focus on the next couple of weeks briefly. Obviously, won't be able to do the whole thing. Are some of the halachos of Lashon Hara. Now, Lashon Hara is an interesting area of halacha, in part because it's actually very popular. For example, I just noticed in my kid's knapsack tonight that they come home every weekend with two brief halacha sheets. And this is coming both from Breuer's and Beis Yaakov the Lower East Side. So both of my little kids have it. And one of the sheets is about Hilchos Shabbos. And that I understand, because Shabbos is kind of relevant. As far as I know, it happens once a week, whether or not we want it. And the other is about Hilchos Lashon Hara.
Is that from the girls' school?
From the girls' school and the boys' school.
Okay.
So here, right? Two thumbs up. So here's the thing. For some reason, Hilchos Lashon Hara has become a very popular course of study. I have a sister-in-law who does like this machzom lefi, that every night, like half an hour, you can't speak to her on the phone, because this is the time that I have to make sure not to speak Lashon Hara. In order to make sure not to speak Lashon Hara, I guess I'm the evil influence, so you can't speak to me on the phone or whatever. It's a beautiful thing. It's really a beautiful thing that Lashon Hara became so popular. So what I'd like to do tonight is talk about Lashon Hara in general, and in particular the Chafetz Chaim's book called Chafetz Chaim. And hopefully we'll understand the purpose of this book's contribution to Judaism, and maybe get into some of the details regarding Lashon Hara. So now, the source in the Torah about not speaking Lashon Hara, the most evident source, is actually in last week's parasha, for those of us in Chutz La'aretz. And the Torah writes, Lo telech rachil ba'amecha, lo tamor adam re'echa ani Hashem. Lo telech rachil ba'amecha means, don't go gossiping. Right? I think there's a show, Gossip Girl. It's supposed to be very popular. Right? You know what it is? I have no idea. There's like a show on TV called Gossip Girl. Don't do that. Right? Don't go gossiping. And don't stand idly by and watch someone be hurt. Apparently the Torah is hinting that if you gossip, you could actually hurt somebody. Which is a really well-known thing. And like the halacha of Lashon Hara and gossip is all about not damaging people. If I say negative stuff about you, so it could be that you won't get a job, it could be you'll lose your job, it could be people won't want to date you, it could be there's a whole host of things that could happen, negative things that could happen. Says the Torah, don't do that. And Lashon Hara is really, really bad. That's what the Pasuk writes. Now here's the funny thing though. The famous source in Midrashim, it appears in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Yotes, and it appears in various Midrashim. I give you one of the Midrashim. There is a Midrash that's well known that sort of puts it in a different perspective. Again, the Pasuk says, don't gossip. If you gossip, you will hurt somebody. Gossiping is really bad. But listen to this Midrash. Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim. Once upon a time, there's a story of a rocheal, of a salesperson, and he's going through cities near Tzipori, and he's making an announcement, who wants life, who wants life, who wants to buy this elixir of life, and everyone is gathering around, and people say, oh, we want to buy it, we want to buy the elixir of life, and then he takes out, instead of medicine, he takes out of his bag some psukim, and he reads the psukim, Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim, ohev yamim l'ra'otov, netzor l'shom chemeras, v'atecha medaber mirma. Now if you want life, don't speak negatively about people. That's the story in the Midrash. Now it's a beautiful story, but in some ways it's a paradoxical take on Lashon Hara. Okay, can anyone figure out there are two paradoxes or two counterintuitivenesses? Is that like a word? To be counterintuitiveness? There are two counterintuitivenesses over here.
You could say there are two counterintuitive things.
Okay. So, there are two. So what are the things? Lashon Hara is supposed to be a bad thing, right? We spoke about how Lashon Hara can kill people. It's damaging. Lo tamor adam re'echa. But the Midrash is taking Lashon Hara and instead of putting it in the bad, negative thing, don't say bad about people, you will hurt them. It says, if you want life, you will not speak negatively. Right? It is the you being the proposed speaker. The proposed speaker. If you want life, don't speak negatively. Now, that is actually a flipping of the idea, right? Lashon Hara, instead of being this great evil, right, what we're doing is we're phrasing that chafetz chayim, if you want life, you don't speak Lashon Hara. Now, you're saying it's the same thing, but there is a certain, there's another play on words over here. The Torah's phrase about Lashon Hara is Lo teilech rachil. Don't go and peddle in gossip. No? I asked people before if anyone knew what Gossip Girl was. No one did. Now, is there anyone here who knows? Okay, we got a smile. Okay? So it does exist. Don't think I made it up.
Huh? The only thing I know about it is I think it's a television program.
Okay. That's about all I know also. But the point is, the Torah, in phrasing Lashon Hara, it speaks about don't be a rachil. The expression in the Midrash is that there was a rochel, a peddler who's going from town to town. So what we have over here is an inversion, right? We're saying that the peddler of goods, who represents the same type of person who would peddle in negative traits, that person is saying, instead of hurting others, if you want life, avoid it. The Chafetz Chaim, the book is called Chafetz Chaim, right? Not Shmirat HaLashon. He wrote a second volume called Shmirat HaLashon. Okay, he published in 1873 the first two parts of this. In 1876, he published the third part. Parts 1 and 2 are Halachot of Lashon Hara and Rechilut. Part 3 is Musar. The Chafetz Chaim, right? Shmirat HaLashon has a negative connotation. Guard your tongue. Chafetz Chaim has a positive connotation. I get the impression, just on the title of the book, that he did not want to be negative down. He wanted to be somewhat upbeat. And this goes against everything anyone says about the book. Because everyone that talks about the Chafetz Chaim says, oh, the man was like such a machmir. He's out to get people to such an extent. Ay, 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 ay. And honestly, you get the impression from the book that he was not that at all. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about this in 3 minutes. Okay, first book he writes, that he's born, here I give you from Wikipedia, so it's obviously true. He's born in Zhetel, Poland, February 6th, 1838. He wrote 21 books. His first book, Chafetz Chaim, in 1873, is the first attempt to organize and clarify the laws regarding Lashon Hara. Right? There is no text about Lashon Hara. In fact, Lashon Hara is not found in any real place in Shas. Lashon Hara is found like in one daf in Maseches Erechin. It has an occasional line here and there. It's not really mentioned. The poskim, those who write books of halacha, don't talk about Lashon Hara. It never makes it to Shulchan Aruch. The Chafetz Chaim writes the first book on Hilchos Lashon Hara. Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention Lashon Hara. It's not there.
That's weird.
Yes. Now, it could be that it's not there because of what we simply call a filing problem. Filing in the sense of people like old people like me and Frida, I apologize, but I have in my office still something called a filing cabinet. And in my filing cabinet, I put different files in. And I have my filing cabinet broken down into different categories.
We have that on our computer.
You're so, like, up to date. The point is, sometimes when I don't include something in a work of law, it's not because it's not law, it's because there's no place to file it. It doesn't fit into any neat category. Right? Shulchan Aruch Chaim is about daily life.
Well.
Yeah, but this is not really daily life in terms of Aruch Chaim goes from the morning until night. It goes through the yearly calendar. It doesn't really fit neatly into anywhere over there. Right? And after Shulchan Aruch Chaim, I have Yoredeya. Yoredeya is kind of a hodgepodge of various different things, but it's basically based on laws of Kashrut, then laws of Avodah Zarah, then laws of Nida, etc. That's Yoredeya. Marital law doesn't fit in there. Business law doesn't fit in there. So Lashon Hara doesn't really fit. So it could be it's just a filing problem. At this conference I spoke at in Harvard, so there was a discussion about kashrut and whether kashrut should include in it ethical treatment of animals and how can we certify something as being kosher if they are not treating animals well, which is a very fair question. So the Orthodox rabbi who was presenting about how these things are not included in kashrut at all, you always need like a straw man to knock down. So he said, well, the fact that all of these ethical treatment of animals things don't make it to Shulchan Aruch shows it's not really halacha.
Ooh.
And the conservative rabbi responded, which I think is absolutely correct. He says, no, it's just a filing problem. The fact that something is not in Shulchan Aruch doesn't mean it's not halacha, no? I have lots of books on the shelf here. They are not, right? A, it's not a complete comprehensive list. B, just because something doesn't make it on the shelf doesn't mean, if it's not Shulchan Aruch, doesn't mean it's not halacha. Okay, so here's the question though. Why did the Chafetz Chaim feels that his job is to write halacha texts about areas for which there are no halacha texts beforehand? So the next book he's going to write about is about Ahavat Chesed.
That's a great book.
Ahavat Chesed is awesome, right? And you have to lend money to the poor. And you have to welcome the guests. And you have to do Bikur Cholim. And you have to do Nichum Avelim. And these are all mitzvahs of Ahavat Chesed. That's what Chafetz Chaim writes about. Okay, and that's very important because these are things that don't appear anywhere really in Shulchan Aruch. And he puts them all together. How come he starts with Lashon Hara? How come the first book he writes about is Lashon Hara? So there's a few approaches that are taken. By the way, much of what I'm saying tonight comes from Benny Brown's article in Dinei Yisrael, volume 25. It's around a 100-page article, so I'm going to kind of give you some excerpts from it. But
like English. Is that English?
English. Oh. Yeah. So Benny Brown has a few suggestions. He quotes that the Chafetz Chaim's own son says that there was some dispute about who should be the rabbi of Radin. See, the Chafetz Chaim at one point was appointed as the rabbi of Radin, and then he resigned the position. We don't know exactly why. And then the Chafetz Chaim established the yeshiva. Chafetz Chaim's son writes that there was like some gossip mongering going on in town. And the Chafetz Chaim wrote this book in a response to a present-day situation. Now, in some ways, that takes like the whole global impact right out of it. It was responding to one specific thing. Others say that the Chafetz Chaim is worried about informers in the Jewish community. We know the Chafetz Chaim wrote a book in the 1880s called Machane Yisrael, Nidche Yisrael. The book was intended for the Jewish Cantonist soldiers. If you remember, Tsar Nicholas, right, put the Jewish people in the army for years and years and years and years, and they'd have like a 20-year conscription. And there's a book, Stanislavski has a book called Tsar Nicholas and the Jews.
Wait, I have a historical note, which is that the Cantonists were done by 1820.
So this is the next iteration of it. But the way people ended up being drafted into the army is that people would like sell last names to each other. My family last name originally was not Schwartz. We were like Halpern or something, and you would steal a last name from someone who died, and that way you would have your kid who was protected from the draft. And there were informers in the Jewish community who would give people over. And the Chafetz Chaim, in a way of kind of telling people not to be informers, he wrote this book about Lashon Hara. That's another suggestion. Others suggest that the Chafetz Chaim is responding to the Maskilim. The Maskilim were attacking the Jewish educational enterprise and saying that you're not dealing with anything important. And he says, no. We deal with important stuff. Don't speak Lashon Hara. That's another approach. I don't know exactly why. The last approach that Benny Brown suggests in footnote 7 in this article is maybe the Chafetz Chaim felt he had to address Lashon Hara because Lashon Hara is becoming more rampant as there is more print publications coming out, and there are more newspapers, and there's more Lashon Hara being spread. He decided, okay, right, and Allah has kama v'kama when we have the internet and whatever. So Chafetz Chaim decided, I gotta put an end to this, so he writes the book. The problem with that last approach is, nowhere in this entire book called Chafetz Chaim does he mention the word iton, or zeitung, or newspaper. It ain't here. So it's unlikely that that is the real reason why he wrote the book. I don't know why he wrote the book. I'm not sure. For some mysterious reason, he decided to start over here. Now, the suggestion that Benny Brown gives about the book Chafetz Chaim is that the Chafetz Chaim was unique in that he took principle and he made principle into, how does he call it? Principle he made into rules. Now, here's the thing. Everyone knew that there's a thing called Lashon Hara. But Lashon Hara is spoken about in very broad contexts. Like, don't say negative things about people. But no one until the Chafetz Chaim sat down and wrote a whole bunch of rules. What happens if you're on a train and this guy comes over to you and he says this and this and this about that and that and that? Right? That's first describing the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim took principles, principles being overarching, broad ideas, and he made them into specific rules. Very often, by the way, halacha works in exactly the opposite way. Now, if you study Prakim and Shas, like Ezeh Neshech, about Ribbis. So Ribbis is a very funny limud because it gives you a case. Jack lent Jim 9 buckets of wheat. The price of wheat goes from here to there. He gives him back 8 buckets that's worth more, right? Whatever it is. And we're deriving principles from cases. Chafetz Chaim takes principles and he makes them into specific cases. And what Benny Brown also argues is that the Chafetz Chaim, in an unusual turn, breaks down the dividing line between halacha and mussar. Halacha is law, no? The best translation of halacha is probably Jewish law. Although, if I define halacha as Jewish law, I'm probably missing all the texture of what halacha is, no? If you assume, I love learning halacha. Right? I don't know of anyone on the planet who takes out a law book and sits there shuckling for hours a day. Oh, the bun. People don't do that. Right? You don't love law to that extent. To define halacha as Jewish law, you're missing out on the texture of halacha, which means you're missing out on the texture of Jewish life. But the best definition of halacha might be Jewish law. Musar, ethics, is different than halacha. Musar is more about aspirations. Halacha is more about normative laws. Musar is what ought to be. Musar pictures for the ceiling. Halacha is based on the floor, not the ceiling, no? Rabbi Wurzberger, my rabbi growing up, my teacher, he begins his book, Ethics of Responsibility, by quoting from Rav Soloveitchik, the halacha is a floor, not a ceiling. In other words, right, it's not that I try, right, I'm really trying hard to pick up that lulav. No, it's like a bare minimum requirement. Halacha is a floor, not a ceiling.
So, like, there's another example from like, the Chafetz Chaim, where like, he took this law about you're supposed to pay workers on time. And he said, you know, that's a really serious, but, you know, Torah said that you should do that. And he said, wow, that's a really serious prohibition of the Torah. Why don't you, before you hire someone, say that you're hiring them all to nine, that this doesn't make sense?
So here's the thing. So that's a very interesting case, because the Chafetz Chaim over there takes the law, and he says it's really serious, and he gives you a way out of it.
I thought there was like a whole moral thrust to the law, but he's not even...
Right, so there's a moral thrust to the law, but he's worried so much that people are violating it that he gives you an out. The Chafetz Chaim, says Benny Brown, when it comes to Lashon Hara, the Chafetz Chaim has no real leniencies. Not only that, the leniencies that are found in the Gemara, the Chafetz Chaim says, don't rely on them. So, for example, the Gemara says that anything that's said in the presence of three people is not considered Lashon Hara. Chafetz Chaim says, no, that's not real Lashon Hara. That's a type of thing that's quasi Lashon Hara, and blah, blah, blah. He dismisses the whole thing. All the leniencies in the Gemara. The Gemara says, that's not Lashon Hara if I say it directly to the person. Chafetz Chaim says, that doesn't really mean that. Come on. So, why is that? So Benny Brown suggests that the Chafetz Chaim is basically trying to incorporate morality and make morality into law. By the way, one of the great disasters in American jurisprudence is prohibition.
Yeah.
Because we took morality and we tried to make it into law. For many reasons.
I mean, it depends on what you define as morality.
So they were defined, again, you could disagree with what the moral is or isn't, but the idea of prohibition was taking something which...
Something that didn't hurt other people, is what you're saying. Like, I think that's a distinction, right? You can't say that the morality and law, like... We have laws of murder that are based on morality.
Right, so laws of murder are clearly... Right, I mean, murder hurts people. I'll give you
drinking
that.
Drinking alcohol does not necessarily...
Oh, drinking. No. Well, their argument WCTU was that drinking alcohol can hurt people. Yes. And there are...
People can do it responsibly.
You can do it responsibly, but their argument was... Again, morality and law.
I
don't want to get too contemporary. One second, Caroline.
Let's
talk about
morality.
Let's talk about abortion.
It's a definition.
One of the issues with abortion in this country right now, one of the reasons it's such a hot topic, is because what we're doing is we're taking some people's moral view and we're trying to ensconce that in law. The state of Alabama, let's say.
Yeah, the state of Alabama.
Right? Okay, theoretically.
Or Georgia,
right? So now, these are... morality and law are not necessarily supposed to go together. Morality is supposed to be something, or it works better. When morality is a personal aspiration, I want to be from, I don't want to drink kol hakavod. Kol hakavod! Don't drink anything.
Absolutely.
Right? You don't want to smoke weed, kol hakavod. Right? But... this is not a conversation I want to have now. But the point is, that's also enforcing some sort of morality. The Chafetz Chaim is taking morality, according to Benny Brown, and he's making morality into law. And the Chafetz Chaim is also scaring people to death with how bad this sin of Lashon Hara is. Not only is he saying, oh, it's not just frumkeit, it's law, right? But he's saying, oh, if you violate this law, Right? Terrible things happen. And the Chofetz Chaim writes, for example, that when the Gemara in Yuma says that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, right? Because we hated each other. The second temple destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. So Chofetz Chaim writes, it wasn't really Sinas Chinam. It was that they spoke Lashon Hara. And Sinas Chinam and Lashon Hara are the same thing. And he, in other words, he's making Lashon Hara the cause of every bad thing in the planet. And the snake is speaking Lashon Hara in Gan Eden. And. He's scaring you. And scaring, a scare tactic, is a way, says Benny Brown, of taking a moral, building that moral up to show it is so awful, it is... Right? That's his approach. Okay. Now, one of the interesting things about the Chafetz Chaim is the sources that he brings are not sources that we would consider to be classical halakha sources. He spends a lot of time on psukim in the Torah. Now, traditional Judaism, and this is something that Christians have been attacking us on for quite some time, traditional Judaism is not really based on the book. Right?
On that book.
On that book. Right? Traditional Judaism is more based on a book like Chafetz Chaim rather than a book called the book, the Bible. Right? That was why that book, The Year of Living Biblically, was so funny. Right?
Yeah.
Because, and besides the fact that he got Mr. Berkowitz from the Heights, but the reason...
Really?
Yeah, the Shatner's guy in the year of living biblically was Berkowitz from the Heights, yeah.
Yeah.
Jacoby Gottlieb.
So,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, what's so funny is that so little of the way we live life is based on Chumash. But the Chafetz Chaim, in an effort to buttress, to support, to really make this prohibition of Lashon Hara very serious, the Chafetz Chaim gives you 17 negative commandments that you can violate when you speak Lashon Hara, and 14 positive precepts, and 6 curses that you violate whenever you speak Lashon Hara. He is basing it on his read of Psukim, and the Pasuk says, Lo Telech Rachil, got that. That's the one Pasuk that is unambiguous about Lashon Hara. Then he speaks about how if you speak Lashon Hara, you're in violation of Lefnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol, because you're causing someone to violate the prohibition of accepting Lashon Hara. And if you accept Lashon Hara, you're causing that person to speak Lashon Hara, because if you want to be there to accept, he's not going to speak just to the wall. And the Chafetz Chaim goes on and says, if you speak Lashon Hara, you're in violation of Pen Tishkachet Hashem Elokecha, because if you'd remember God, you wouldn't speak Lashon Hara. And the Chafetz Chaim goes on, he says, if you speak Lashon Hara, you're in violation of Lo Techalalu Et Shem Kodshi. You're making a Chilul Hashem, because he brings some sources that Chilul Hashem means that I do a sin that I get no benefit from. And since I don't get any benefit from saying negative stuff about you, that's Chilul Hashem. And he goes on and he goes on and he goes on. Now this, says Benny Brown, is fascinating. In his words, he is thickening the prohibition. But what he's really doing is he's listing 17 Isurim, even though these 17 Isurim can all be challenged, or most of them. Rav Kook wrote notes on the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, and he challenged these list of 17. One of the 17 that Chafetz Chaim writes is that if I speak Lashon Hara, I'm in violation of Lo Tisnat Achicha Bovavecha. I'm not allowed to hate another Jew. If I speak Lashon Hara, I'm hating you. So Rav Kook says, dude, hold it. By the way, Rav Kook had a connection to Chafetz Chaim. Rav Kook says, hey, dude, hold it, 1 second. Lo Tisnat Achicha Bilvavecha. If you say it, you're not in violation. Right? And
picky.
There's a few of these things. Lo tikom v'lo titar. Don't take revenge. Chafetz Chaim says, if I speak Lashon Hara, it could be that I'm taking revenge against you. You hurt me, I want to hurt you. Says Rav Kook, lo tikom v'lo titar. Right? That's only in monetary things. I say, lend me your hatchet, and you say, I'm not going to lend you the hatchet, just like you didn't lend me my hatchet yesterday, whatever it is, right? That's the violation of nekama. It's only monetary. The Chafetz Chaim, according to Benny Brown, what he is doing is he's building up a prohibition. He's including his moral intuitions. He's looking for sources to base it on. So he's calling all these psukim. Now, just an aside, the fact that Rav Kook wrote notes on the Chafetz Chaim, right, they're roughly contemporaries. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner is slightly younger than Chafetz Chaim. He wrote notes on the Chafetz Chaim. That means that the book was accepted. Gedolim about now. Interestingly, also both Rav Kook and Rav Kuttner had a personal connection to the Chafetz Chaim. My guess is that the Chafetz Chaim had a certain magnetism about him that people who met him wanted to get to know his book, and that's why they read it. But again, this is all conjecture on my part. I would argue, though, that Benny Brown's approach to the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim is taking morals and he's making them into laws. He's taking principles and making them into rules, or however you want to say it. I don't know if it's correct. You see, it seems to me that the Chafetz Chaim had an interesting style of writing, which comes across in his more famous book, or less famous book, called the Mishnah Berurah. The Chafetz Chaim's style of writing is he writes a digest. Now, a digest basically quotes any source on the topic. That's what a digest does, no? And sometimes in the digest, for example, I don't know if any of you still read Reader's Digest, but it's not created equal. Sometimes you have really good pieces, and sometimes the pieces are not as good. But the idea of writing a digest is, I want to quote all of the sources that I can on this topic. And the Chafetz Chaim, I don't think, means to be comprehensive. Nor does the Chafetz Chaim mean to fully analyze every possibility. And yes, Lo Tikom V'lo Titar maybe really applies to Mamonis, but it could be it applies not to Mamonis. And if I'm writing a digest, I'm going to quote any source that might connect to this idea. So my theory is that the Chafetz Chaim is writing a digest. And because it's a digest also, the Chafetz Chaim is not writing a book of laws or rules. The Chafetz Chaim does not talk about any of the issues that were coming up in his time about Lashon Hara. Journalism is not mentioned at all. That's a big issue. The Chafetz Chaim never deals with the issue of freedom of speech. Freedom of speech seems to go against the concept of Lashon Hara. No? Now, you could argue freedom of speech isn't a halachic concept. Maybe. But at least if there's a concept that's being so discussed in the world, so at least you would talk about it. The Chafetz Chaim does not mention, there's a whole literature in halacha about sanctions, about so-and-so said negative stuff about so-and-so, so they put him in cheirim. Never once does the Chafetz Chaim quote the cheirim idea. The Chafetz Chaim does speak about sanctions for Lashon Hara. The sanctions he talks about are tzara'as. Which doesn't really, I don't know about you, do you know anyone who got tzara'as recently? No, I don't know anyone. So what's the Chafetz Chaim doing? I think what the Chafetz Chaim is doing is he is quoting traditional sources and giving you a digest of the laws of Lashon Hara. And that digest of the laws of Lashon Hara includes Saras, because Saras makes it right in the classical sources. And the Chafetz Chaim has to balance the sources that he quotes with his objective in the book. In other words, the Chafetz Chaim is not writing a book of Frumkeit and Musar. He tells you he's writing a book of Halacha. But Halacha means classical sources. So Chafetz Chaim, I give you on page 2, a Ha'ara that he has, where he asks the question, how come in this book I quote the Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shari Tshuva? If Rabbeinu Yonah is a work of Musar and ethics, and I'm writing a book of Halacha. So he answers, well, I only quote Rabbeinu Yonah when Rabbeinu Yonah is being lenient. Now that's a fascinating comment. Chafetz Chaim understood his job as not giving you Mussar and ethics specifically. And the fact that he quotes the Rabbi Yona doesn't mean he's using a Mussar book. No, 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 it's not Mussar. It's real halacha. And I only quote Rabbi Yona when no one disagrees with him. And I only quote him when he's lenient. Now, what that means is the Chafetz Chaim is not viewing himself as being stringent. But what do you mean? Doesn't he have a million stringencies throughout the book? And the answer, I would say, is that the Chafetz Chaim doesn't really view his book as being a guidebook for halacha. He views it as being a digest where you could find all the things. Now, that's really important, because if I write a book of halacha, I have to weigh sources against each other, no? The Rambam says this, the Ravid says that, how do I paskin? Right? That's a question that I have to ask when I'm writing a real book of halacha. But I'm writing a book that's a digest of halacha sources, I don't have to tell you how I paskin in dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid. And the Chofetz Chaim never tells you that. And that's because the Chafetz Chaim's book, I would argue, is not halacha in the way we understand it as what to do, what not to do. So again, this is sort of my commentary on Benny Brown's article. I think Benny Brown makes some very important points, but nonetheless, I would argue that the book is properly understood to be a book of halachic sources, not a book of halacha. Oh. Hello, Yitzchak.
Hi, does that mean, Lemaiser, we don't know that the Chafetz Chaim book is...
So I would say, Lemaiser, if you want to pass in the Shiloh about Lashon Hara, you have to take the sources that are in the Chafetz Chaim and then balance them against each other and come to a conclusion.
It's not the Basco from Shemai saying this is... He's not Torah Messina, this is the exact copy you have to take and anything...
I don't think so. And I think, by the way, if you read the Chafetz Chaim's introduction, he says that people don't have knowledge about the laws of Lashon Hara, therefore I'm bringing down all the sources. He doesn't say that I'm writing a Shulchan Aruch of Lashon Hara. He doesn't say I'm telling you what to do. I really don't think that it's meant to be a guidebook, a rule book. Now, there are people who wrote rule books of Lashon Hara, but that's not this. That came after people took his ideas. What's happened is as follows. Two things. In most yeshivot, the Chafetz Chaim is found not in the halacha section, but it's found in the Musar section of the library. Moreover, in most yeshivot, you learn Chafetz Chaim when? Do you want during halacha seder or Musar seder? In Keren B'Yavna, Chafetz Chaim was learned during halacha seder. But it was in the Musar section of the Beis Medrash. If anyone can explain that one to me, I don't know. I think what Benny Brown is hitting at is a very important point that I don't know how to classify this book. Is it halacha or is it Musar? And one of the reasons I'd argue that there's a tension is because the book is a halachic digest. Now, my theory also applies to the Mishnah Brura in that way. Also, the Mishnah Brura is more of a commentary rather than, I know the Chazanish said it's like the Posek Acharon, but the shiurim that I gave a few years ago about the Mishnah Brura, my understanding is that the Mishnah Brura is not a full-fledged halachic decisor. Okay, so thank you for listening, and have a good evening.